This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode number 123, sponsored by Jim Hanley's Universe, Foo Comics, Triptych Books, and Discount Comic Book Service. There, and welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode number 123. My name is Ron, and I'm here with Josh.
Hello.
And Connor is still on his extended vacation, his leave of absence. So we invited a special guest to join us, Mr. Tom Caters.
Hey, it's like a Hands Across America version.
It really is. We've got people in every time zone.
Mountain, but they don't count.
Oh, mountain doesn't count. No, they never count. Tom, can we say you're of Around Comics podcast, or is that no longer, or is it you're just a solo artist now?
I'm just my own man. I suppose I'm still. I guess. I mean, it isn't like the podcast episodes have disappeared off the face of the earth.
True.
So
yeah, it's not like all those Genesis records disappeared when Phil Collins left.
Exactly. So yeah, I am of the Around Comics podcast.
And you're also of your Tom vs. the JLA podcast, which we'll talk about later.
Thank you.
All right. So, all right. Before we get started, for anybody who might be new to the game, and we know you're not, but I'll say it anyway. We're from not around comics, but ifanboy.com, where we read comics and we talk about them. And every week, one of us reads all the comics that they can on a Wednesday and picks the best one and writes a review of it on ifanboy.com. And then we come here and talk about it as well as the other comics that came out during the week here on this podcast. Before we get started, and Tom, I'm going to warn you as well, we're going to talk about what happens in the comics. So it's often called spoilers in the web. In the internet, the netiquette is spoilers. So if you don't want to be spoiled, stop, pause the podcast, come back later after you read your comics, and Tom, you're just shit out of luck. So,
well, when you invited me to be on the show, I said, crap, I'm going to have to start reading comic books again. I haven't. So.
Just when you thought you were out, we pulled you back in.
Exactly.
Pretending I like them, pretending I care. Oh, who's the artist on? Who cares?
All right, so let's get started with this. Josh had the pick this week, so Josh, let her go.
Now, as far as I know, Tom, you haven't read this, so I'll be spoiling it for you.
Okay, I'm fine with it.
All right, that's fine.
You may continue with the show.
Otherwise, we would have just stopped. Right. You'll note I'm not hacking and about to die, so I'm starting to feel better.
Yeah, you're on the mend. Welcome back.
Let me tell you. I had a whole heap and load of books this week, and if you've been on ifanboy.com or anywhere, you went to a comic book store, you know that this week was kind of absurd.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this was the most absurd week I've seen in a long time. Bunch of premiere issues from really big people coming out. There's the New Frontier, and then this book, Logan, by Brian Vaughn and Eduardo Risso. And I read through everything, and there was a lot of really good books, but you know, I was kind of surprised. I was like, oh, I think Logan was the best thing I read. And I kind of looked through them again. I was like, it was. And you know, I'm the first one to admit there was really nothing terribly special about it. Like, it was a Wolverine story. He was in Japan. But what it did have is it rekindled my love affair with Brian K. Vaughan, who I really missed.
Does his wife know about that?
Every time I'm on this show, someone says something, some sort of embarrassing admission about their love for Brian K.
I'm not embarrassed in the least. But honestly, like, I miss him doing comics. It's really notable. I just like the way that he makes comic books and that he sets them up. I don't really have a huge love for Wolverine, but what you've got here is a Wolverine story about there's a flashback to him during World War II as a prisoner in a Japanese camp, and he meets another American, and they break out, and he meets a girl, and it was all very stuff that's been done before, but it was sort of in the style of it that really got me. Also, the art was by Eduardo Risso, who I've always loved, and I stopped reading 100 Bullets because I didn't know what was going on for about 4 months straight.
Because it makes no sense.
Yeah, no. Well, I'm almost convinced that it does.
You've come around to the end.
I just gave up. And you know, like, if I were to gather up all my issues right now and read them right in a row, it would probably be better. And I'm totally willing to admit that. And I'll go back someday. But whatever. Anyway, I never had a problem with Eduardo Risso's art. I've always loved him from the second that I sort of saw his work. He's been one of my favorites. But you know, he only does that book for the most part, so it's, you know, he gets out every once in a while, I guess, to do stuff like this. It's really just a basic, simple story, and then Vaughn does what he does best, like Wolverine. The last page makes you go, oh, because he's really good at the issues. I don't know if there's a better person at writing single issues in comic books who doesn't work doing comic books anymore. Because he did this a long time ago, as far as I understand. Like, he wrote this quite a long time back.
Yeah.
Basically, again, like, we're going to spoil it, but he meets this girl, and after he escapes from the prison, and they're having a lovely night together, and he wakes up in the morning, and he's like, he's like, this is heaven. She's like, no, not heaven. He's like, where am I? And she goes, Hiroshima. And it just says, it was the most beautiful word I ever heard, and, like, it's a beautiful sunset. And that's the last page. So I'm like, wow. Wolverine during the atom bomb drop.
Vaughn really likes the disasters, like the end of Ex Machina 1 and this one. Is that
he doesn't Like, he does these huge, stupid, obvious things that no one else did. Like, of course Wolverine during Hiroshima.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
I think it's sounds interesting. I haven't picked it up yet, but I'm going to. I like it when someone can take Wolverine's past and instead of focusing on, like, let's fill in all the blanks, you know, it's a character who you have an opportunity to really put anywhere in 20th century history. Yep. You rarely see anyone actually do that. You know, there was a story where he was in the concentration camp, which I thought was really cool. And this also sounds great because you can put him there and he's going to forget about it.
What's also interesting, because of that, apparently Wolverine has been in every notable moment in the 20th century. Like, he was in the Spanish Civil War in the 30s with Generalissimo Franco.
He's the Forrest Gump of Marvel Comics.
He really is.
I was just about to say that. Yeah.
But you know, the thing is you're not wrong, is that, like, he's not going to remember. So basically you can do these Elseworld stories. And one of the comments that I would see, that I kept seeing on the site, was like, oh, come on, another Wolverine story? Well, you know, there's a reason that this character endures. You know, just like if I was to read a really good Batman story tomorrow, someone would go, oh, come on, do we need another Batman story? And there's a lot more Batman stories than there are Wolverine stories. Yeah. You know, so he can be a good character when used. And I think that, Tom, actually, you said it well in a way that I hadn't thought of. They're not trying to reveal something about his past that makes him who he is. They're trying to tell – they're saying, well, what if you put him here and you tell that story? And that's what's intriguing to me.
Cool. So so to step away from Vaughn for a moment, you bought the black and white version, right?
Did not.
Oh. I mean,
I heard about
it. I mean, no disrespect to Dean White, who colored the color version, but they released, I thought it was really interesting that they released this both black and white and color. And I actually bought both to compare them. And while Dean White did a good job coloring it, Eduardo Risso's art in black and white is just, I mean, it harkens back to the work that he did that none of us have seen, you know, that he did, you know, overseas and all that kind of stuff. And it black and white, it just looks amazing. It just looks really, really good. I don't know. The black and white was the one to get in my book. So
he's not. He you can see, like, the Frank Miller influence and probably other stuff that I'm not smart enough to know about. But I actually made a point to say that I really like the colors in this book. In the one that I read, Dean White. The sort of stuff that takes place in the past has this washed out watercolor look. That's really nice.
Yeah.
It's just sort of a muted palette.
Well, because it's got to be a challenge for Dean White or any colorist who's coloring somebody like Risso, who doesn't need to be colored. You know what I mean? So, like, what you've got to do is you can't just fill, you know, color in between the lines and you have to do something to almost, you know, match the level of the pencils as they are, you know. So
your A-game.
Yeah, exactly.
A-game.
Yeah.
So, Ron, what did you think?
Oh, I loved it. I mean, I don't know if it was the pick, but I think my pick was fairly easy this week. But I thought it was great. I mean, it was classic Vaughn at his best, and everything you said about Wolverine and Risso's art for me is what put this over the top. I mean, it's almost like I don't even care that Vaughn did it. You know what I mean? Like it was the art that really blew me away. So
it really does make me wish that we could see more Vaughn, basically.
Yeah. Well, give up that hope.
I know.
So.
Well, I'll buy it because I'm a big Hiroshima fan.
You've got all these Hiroshima collectibles in your apartment.
Yeah, I had no idea that was what it was about.
It's funny that
newsletter didn't inform me.
I sort of lean Nagasaki, but I'll go with it for this. If I have to.
So, Thank God old people don't listen.
Ouch. That made me feel bad. So there's your pick. We got a lot of other books to get to. So.
Yeah. So I honestly was surprised because I thought – I mean, I teased you actually because I knew you had the pick, and I was just like, dude, why are you even – like, start writing it now because it's going to be the Justice League New Frontier special, because we've been on this Justice League New Frontier high for the past month. and speaking of which, we should probably attest – those of you who listened to our last week's show, we're doing a giveaway with the New Frontier and the pint glasses from the party. We're going to announce the winners at the end of the show, so stay tuned. But anyway, so yeah, so I thought this would have been your pick. Why wasn't it, you son of a bitch?
I will tell you exactly why. I was probably right near the end of the Superman Batman story, and I was like, this is the greatest thing that I have ever seen in my life. I was down.
It was,
you know what I mean?
It was right. Tom, did you pick up this book or did you?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I did.
So this was this. I mean, there are classic Superman Batman fights, but none have really been held up as close to the Dark Knight return. The Batman Superman fight in the Dark Knight. This stands right up there next to it, if you ask me. Totally stands up next to it.
I was totally having fun with it, and it's beautiful. You know, it's you know, there's a panel where he drives the Batmobile, or Batman drives the Batmobile directly at like at Superman, or he drives it at a cliff. Pile of junk or something, and he's got like a grin on his face, like an evil just smile. I was like, this is great, and then it lost me. I'll be completely honest, when Batman was like, hey, I'm Bruce Wayne, no hard feelings.
I do think like, that was really done really fast. Yeah. I will say I liked how Darwin Cook took Wonder Woman, Batman, and Superman and put them all together, and you can see why the three of them have the relationship that they do. They're not just sort of emotionless icons. You know, Superman's always good, Wonder Woman's a warrior, and Batman's like dark and evil. There's a reason why there would be a friendship between them, and there's a reason why when they're together and they're written really well, they're really interesting to read. So I thought that was very well done.
I'll agree with you, Tom, totally, except I do agree with Josh that the end was just very it was almost like Cook realized, he's like, oh crap, I'm running out of pages.
It ended really fast.
But that said, is that a golden, and Tom, you might know better than either me or Josh, is that a golden age story?
Silver, golden,
this is on the cusp. Yeah.
The first time Batman and Superman met each other was like on a cruise liner. So let's not hang too closely to continuity for guidance on what a great story is.
Well, speaking of continuity, just to step away from the Batman Superman story, how epically awesome was the first page?
Yes, it was pretty much a big middle finger to anyone who's like, oh, what world, what earth is this on? You know, like, who cares?
What I loved was Rip Hunter, because the first page explains, it kind of, you know, it says, it's Rip Hunter talking to you, the reader, and he's answering the question that you might have is, when does this book take place? But he's doing it in, like, this kitschy 50s kind of way. He's got a pipe. In one panel, he's got a coonskin cap, you know? and then it just ends with him just, you know, making a drink and sitting with a chick, turning the record player on and going, who cares? Just enjoy the book.
I really like how he shoots a salesman in the midst of it.
Yes. The salesman dies off-panel, though.
And then, but you hear him.
And you see Green Lantern completely confused at the end of it.
Yeah. No, that was a beautiful, beautiful page. I mean, like, the person who ends up owning that page.
Yeah.
I mean, think about that. That's an epic page.
Yeah, totally is.
What'd you think of the other couple of stories?
I thought they were all right. To be honest with you, I loved the description the Wonder Woman Black Canary on the table of contents better than I liked the story. Wonder Woman Black Canary fight the gender war, and I was like, oh, that's great.
I thought it was a little too cute.
Yeah.
You know, like the Glory Steinem thing at the end.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, okay, I get it. Hurting bra.
He did that.
There
we go. Yeah. He did that same thing in that one issue of The Spirit.
Yeah.
I mean, sort of when he did that. I mean, you know, it was cutesy.
Yeah.
It's almost like he was going for a different tone in this. So I can sort of.
Yeah.
I don't want to say forgive it.
Well, but the thing is, it's a 40. It's a however many paid special. I mean, like how, you know, like it's a packed book. You know, and
it's fun
and,
to do different styles, though. Yeah. I mean, you gotta give them that.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was terrible. I didn't throw the book to the ground and scream.
No, you know, it was kind of. I almost would have reordered it. Because like the first story, the fight and the Superman Batman Wonder Woman thing was so sort of epic that afterwards it just felt like, you know, what you were reading didn't matter as much.
It felt like filler when it wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I do
love about what Cook has done with the characters, at least in his universe and on his, you know, Earth or whatever, is mainly like with Wonder Woman and Black Canary is like you really see it, like Wonder Woman's big. You know what I mean? Like, she's a big woman, you know what I mean? And, like, and J-Bone, with his pencils on the Wonder Woman Black Canary story, takes a more kind of animation, almost more hourglass kind of over-the-top, you know, kind of thing. But still, you get this idea where they're beautiful, but she's bigger than Black Canary, you know what I mean?
Like, J-Bone kind of gave her a front butt.
Yeah, he did.
I'm not going to lie to you. There's other words, too, and I'm not saying them.
Look them up.
I really like Cook's Wonder Woman. Yeah. I learned that when I watched the New Frontier DVD recently again, and then I really love her in the Superman Batman story. Like, it's the only person I can think of who's made me interested in Wonder Woman.
I thought this was a great cap to our kind of month of New Frontier. I thought this was a great way to end it.
Terry Moore, a creator who is very near and dear to Ron in my heart. I don't know, Tom, did you ever read Strangers in Paradise?
I'm in the course of reading the books.
Awesome.
The pocket books.
Cool.
Are you liking it?
Yes, I am. I enjoy it quite a bit.
How great of a format is that to read, though? I mean,
it's the best. Yeah. On the train, it looks like I'm reading a book.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Well, he came out with Echo Number One, which is his first new creation other than Paradise 2, really, ever.
Who knows what else he's got in his books, but this is his next creator owned project after Strangers in Paradise. So
which is a pretty big deal to live up to.
I'm a huge Moore fan. Or just really quickly, I think it's really interesting, and I know it's been said elsewhere in the blogosphere, but I think like a couple weeks ago we had Jeff Smith with Rassel Number One, which is his first book after Bone. And now this week we have Terry Moore with Echo Number One. And then in a couple of weeks we're going to have Glamour Puss, which is Dave Sims' first book after Cerebus. And so
it's also just David Lapham.
But Lapham's been working. It's not like Lapham's done nothing else, you know. But I mean, Lapham had Silverfish recently. We're going to talk about Lapham in a second. But yeah, you're right. I could lump Lapham in that. But I think it's really interesting to see these like kind of icons of, you know, the 90s independent movement, although Sim goes back to the 70s, but like icons on like kind of starting over again.
Yeah.
You know, and
they have to start completely from scratch.
Yeah. That's
crazy.
That said, I wrote something up on ifanboy.com about my anticipation of Echo and how I had done I didn't read about it. I went completely media blackout about it. All I allowed myself was to write that piece on ifanboy.com, put up the preview art that Terry sent us of the five pages that really don't give anything away. All I knew was a girl with some sort of camera involved, some sort of photography. After reading this, well, damn, he went sci-fi.
Yeah, I didn't expect that.
Neither did I.
And it looks like Strangers in Paradise, so that's weird.
They call that flipping the script on you.
Yes. But that said, I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought it was fantastic. The thing is that like I'm not gonna be like, oh, it looks like Strangers in Paradise. Like, that's what he does. That's how he draws. That's what,
I,
you know,
I love the way he draws. Yeah. I have no problem with that. I did feel it's very much a first issue.
Oh yeah.
And there was a lot of, oh, I don't – like, it felt like it ended quickly. He had to get through a lot, so it's not a fault.
Well, I actually don't agree with that. It was definitely a first issue, but we saw what we were introduced to, I assume, is our antagonist, and we see what happened. Like, you know, like, there's some idea of some sort of government thing going on, some sort of government, you know, super suit testing going on. An explosion happens. All these little pieces of metal fall on this poor photographer girl, and she gets back home, and she sees the super suit, like the government suit, starting to grow a patch on her chest.
So it's the symbiote.
Yeah. So I thought it was a perfect first issue. You know what I mean? Like, it set the stage.
I think by the time it was over, I was like, ooh, but more. I mean, about Rosal. I think it's just the 22-page.
Well, that's what a monthly issue is supposed to do. It's supposed to make you want more.
It's true.
I want all of it at once.
Is he doing this every 6 weeks or every...
I don't know. It says March 2008, so I'm assuming he's going to go monthly. I mean, Terry's always he's tried to do monthly, and he never really has a problem with it. So,
because I got to Razzle and it was like May 2008, I was like, ooh, because that felt like that even more.
Yeah,
where it's like it just ended quick.
May.
Yeah.
I don't even know where I'm going to be in May.
I'm pretty intrigued.
Yeah.
I really, because I mean he's proven to me that he's so good with the stuff that he's done. Like,
yeah,
I'll give him a ton of leeway. I want to know what he's going to do because this feels very different.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. So, and so then on the same tip, you mentioned David Lapham. David Lapham's Young Liars Number One came out this week, which was a Vertigo book. I believe it's creator owned, but published through Vertigo. Before I talked about the comic book, did either of you pick it up or see it in the store or anything?
I read it.
Okay.
I won't read David Lapham. He makes me cry.
Really?
He's so depressing.
Right. Well, I don't know if you saw the cover, but this is my nomination for the best cover of the year so far.
It's pretty hot.
It's
a hot cover.
It's an awesome cover. You've got, you know, boom, a noticeable logo that's dynamic sitting on top of a guitar with a gun attached to the end of it. You see issue one, big single panel of the main character who's screaming at, "Are you ready for this?" You know, like this cover. I walked into the store and I saw this cover on the counter and I was like, "What is that?" And then I realized what it was and I got so fucking excited. It was awesome.
It has a guitar with a gun.
Yeah.
Besides that, a guitar with a gun on it.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
See, your leg is made of a machine gun.
On that same school, yes.
Yeah. So this I didn't know what to expect going into this. I open up the first page, and the story is called "At 1,000 Miles an Hour," and the credits are actually printed like on a mixtape, and on the backside of the mixtape, there's some recommendations of songs, which, you know, I always love when music is pulled into the comics, and we're introduced to this world of this kid who moved to New York City with some money and a guitar, and meets up with just a crazy girl and ends up who's she's a descendant of a wealthy father, but she's just completely crazy, and you just get introduced to this like urban city environment that moves at 1,000 miles an hour, and it you get this feeling of there's some level of mystery in that everybody's kind of on the edge of making it or not, you know, like, you know, like he had to sell his guitar to keep, you know, to pay his rent and that sort of thing. And when his whole kind of social group find out that this girl is missing and actually, you know, related to the money, you're going to see where the kind of the mystery starts, the violent element is going to play into it as people get greedy and turn each other in and all that kind of stuff. But this was Dave Lapham at his best. This was, you know,
I really quite enjoyed it as well. I like the aspect of it that everyone seems to think they're more important than they are.
Yeah.
You know, all the care, you know, you have your woman.
I have something to say about that.
you know, the girl who drops out of school to marry a rock star, and then she catches a venereal disease from that rock star and can't have babies. Yeah. You know, just stuff that is depressing, but also sort of gallows humor funny,
yep,
in a way. And I thought it moved along at like a really nice pace too, yep, for a Vertigo book. If I had like a criticism for some of the Vertigo books, is that the pace is maybe a slight bit too slow. But this one did not have that problem.
Yeah.
Are you talking about Scalped?
What? What?
No, Mothers, I mean, part 5 of 30. Oh God!
No, this.
I love the book. I'm sorry.
It is truly moving extremely fast, and yeah. I liked it. I thought it was a good first issue.
Yeah, I mean, I probably didn't describe it as well as the little summary on the Vertigo page can, but you know, Sadie was a poor little rich girl with a bullet lodged in her brain. Brain turned her into an adrenaline junkie who loves skydiving off buildings and kicking the daylights out of people. So I mean, it moves as fast as it says it would, and it just got this energy, and it reminds me of the great, you know, Stray Bullets days of the mid to late 90s that Lapham was doing that book, and this is probably as close as we're gonna get to it. So like, bring it on! And that cover was just epic. It was just so good, so good. So yeah,
when I'm getting shot with that guitar gun.
Yeah, the guitar gun's pretty cool. The guitar gun, it looks like it because it worked. The guitar gun wasn't just on the cover; it worked its way into the story too. So.
Is there any chance that we can call it a guntar?
We could.
Which we'll is start to use that word that I didn't want to use earlier. Anyway.
Guntar.
Guntar.
Okay, moving on. How about the all-new Adam?
I wanted to talk about this because it was actually something that made me have to confront the fanboyish side of me. That
You confront the fanboy?
You know, the part that I make fun of other people for on the internet, well, not on the internet, but I talk to people and say, look at what this person said, and make fun of them. When you have a character like the Atom, who's been written by one person, Gail Simone, and it has a very definite feel to it, and then someone else starts writing it, and my first feeling when I'm writing it is like, this is not Ryan Choi. The whole time I'm starting to get angry. And then by the end, I'm like, calm down. It's just, you know, how many... every month you probably have, what, 7 different people writing Batman?
Yeah.
And I got all, like, worked up for about 11 pages about how I didn't feel Ryan Choi as if he was a real person. And someone was, like, messing with his MySpace page. And then I finally came to terms with it. Because the Gail Simone version was a very sort of wacky, zany, like lots of crazy stuff going on. And Remender and Olaf really made it more of a pulpy, science fiction-y feel
to it. I'm shocked that Remender would make something a pulpy science fiction kind of feel to something.
It hardly ever happens.
I know. It's just...
Oh, this was Remender's first issue.
Yeah, you didn't pick it up. Yes. Or... Yeah.
Dude, I had so many books. I don't even know what I read.
What I thought was really fun. What I thought was really funny was on the actually the cover itself. There's actually a balloon that says "Get ready for high adventure science fiction." You know,
get ready for it.
Shove it down your throat. Shove it down your throat.
It was okay. I think having really enjoyed the previous version, it'd probably take me a couple issues to let go of that the 8-year-old in me. That demands that Ryan Choi be that way forever.
Yeah.
One thing you're not going to get out of Rick Remender is Gail Simone.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, if nothing else.
There's a joke there that I'm not going to make.
Like, no one has ever been like, I really like this Gail Simone. Wait a minute, this is written by Rick Remender. That's never happened.
No matter how hard you try, you're not going to pull Gail Simone out of Rick Remender.
Nor would you want to.
No. Leave it be. Leave it be. Just let it go.
Step away from the writer. I didn't read. Well, no, don't get me. Actually, that's a lie. I've only read a couple of issues of The Atom by Gail Simone because actually Hank of Chicago bought them for me at the Chicago Con this past summer.
Because you can't take stuff from him.
I know. I tried not to, but he wouldn't take no for an answer. He really wanted me to read them.
Seeing how he rolls.
I know, Hank.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I read those issues and I enjoyed it. I see what you mean by the tone of this is a little different. And I don't want to say this is like The Atom, but Fear Agent meets The Atom. But it is science fiction-y. I mean, like, you know, there's the... You know, he's got the helmet bubble and there's a lot of, you know, like he gets really small and he's in the bloodstream and all that kind of stuff. So it's like, it's interesting, you know, so.
Well, not to be cruel about it, but, you know, if your book is only selling 20,000 copies,
yeah,
you're probably going to get a personality change yeah. at some level, you know.
Yeah.
That would make sense. It wasn't all of the other Atoms were very wrapped up in Countdown, too.
Well, that
I read a few in the middle and it was just all...
Well, that was because they were caught up in the search for Ray Palmer stuff. That's why, yeah. So
I don't know. Neat.
That's cool.
Okay. Well.
Before we move on, are you going to keep reading it, Tom, or like, can you?
I'm going to give it one more and see if it strikes my fancy.
All right. So you can overcome your fanboyism.
My anger.
Yeah.
The anger inside of me. I don't want to be angry at Rick Remender.
Especially for Gail Simone. That's what I think is so funny.
I just don't. Yeah. I don't want Rick to have to feel that burden coming across, you know, the ether of me sitting seething in my living room as I'm like, God, a floating head just isn't as funny.
All right, then.
The thing about Remender where, like, you can like one of his books and not like another one of his books in a way that doesn't work with, like, Bendis or something
or
like
Claremont.
That. Well. Wow. No, but you're right. Like yeah. His stuff is all, like, you can't really pinpoint it. So it would make sense that, like, I don't have to feel bad if I like one of his books but don't like another one, I guess, because he's just way different.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to get to business.
All right.
Business. Jim Hanley's Universe is one of America's best and most progressive comic book stores. They offer the best selection of titles and merchandise from mainstream to manga to minis. Jim Hanley's Universe has it all. They really do go in the store. It blows your mind. The store is located opposite the Empire State Building in Midtown Manhattan. And, of course, on lovely Staten Island, which you may know as the home of the Vulture, at 325 New Dorp Lane. You can visit them on the web at jhuniverse.com or visit them at MySpace, which is myspace.com/Jim Hanley's Universe. That's where our literature meet, and we want to thank them.
Cool. And we also, if a brick-and-mortar store in New York is in your speed, we'd like to... If you're stuck in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, and you need your comics and you want to use the internet, we want to welcome our new sponsor, Discount Comic Book Service at dcbservice.com. They're a great, great service for ordering your weekly kind of comics over the internet. They've got monthly specials up to 75% off. They do 40% off the major publishers. They ship them really nicely for you at a flat rate of $5.95 for all U.S. U.S. orders. Pretty much anything in previews you want, you can get through DCBS. They've got over 5,400 trade paperbacks in stock and available for order. You can go online, you can track your order, see what you've ordered, see what's coming. I know a lot of our listeners use them, and probably a lot more of you should, if this is your speed. So head over to www.dcbservice.com and check them out today, and we thank them for joining the iFanboy train. So.
If you're shopping at Jim Hanley's, don't use them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if you live in New York, go to Hanley's. But if you live in you know, somewhere else, go to DCBS Service.
I think we're playing them off against each other.
Well, it's a limited field of advertisers.
I gotta say that every single month we end up having to talk about Green Lantern,
which is ironic because a year ago we had written the series off. As a failure.
Yes.
Like
same writer, I might add.
Yeah, like, do you remember the in Russia with the girl, with what's her name, Cowgirl, and yes. all that stuff? Like, it was bad, right? I mean, I'm not crazy.
Sapphire.
Yeah.
It wasn't great. Yeah. They had one issue that had, like, a pink cover on it, which is never very good.
Yeah.
It's always a sign of something horrible is going on. They're not paying attention to that.
that said, I'm every issue since the Sinestro War has started, I've loved. I've absolutely loved. And I know we got a voicemail or an email that I don't think we're doing on the show, but somebody was asking what we think of the colored lanterns. And this issue had the first, you know, appearance of the Red Lantern. And I love the idea of the colored lantern, of course. Like,
I'm sorry, is that politically correct to say?
The colored lanterns.
Hue lanterns. It sounds very bad.
The spectrum of emotional power.
Yeah, exactly. But so, so we're introduced to the first Red Lantern, with red is fueled by rage, and it's Lara, who is the Green Lantern, who was found guilty by the Alpha Lanterns of killing Abinsur's son. So
I love the idea of the using the whole spectrum of colors, because when you think about a book like Green Lantern's very much traditionally born out of the most technicolor elements of comic books.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about colors, you know, and yellow and green. And it's one of those concepts that when you hear it, you're like, well, yeah, why didn't anyone ever do that before?
I had the exact same thought. I can't believe this hasn't been done yet. You know, how many years has it been? Like 60 years or 50 years of the Green Lantern, you know?
Well, they were busy making Hal a truck driver. They didn't have time. time for stuff like this.
That's my note about this issue, is that, like, Johns is doing things that seem so frickin' obvious.
Yeah.
And it's like, and however many years, 40, 50 years, this hasn't been done yet? That's crazy.
Yeah.
And I've got to say that Sinestro in this is like, he's what a great villain. He's Ben Linus.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he's just a great villain. And I've just, all this, the scenes where he sits sort of in the shadows in a cell are the most intriguing.
He totally is the creepy dude from Lost. You're totally right.
I also absolutely think that before this whole storyline's over, the Blackest Night, that Sinestro is going to get a Green Lantern ring at some point.
Yeah, I wouldn't believe that.
It's going to be like the low point.
Yeah.
You know,
they have to turn to him for help. Yeah, yeah.
And if Geoff Johns is listening to this, I got your number. I read your book, you magnificent bastard.
He's a great white whale, isn't he? Yeah.
Johns is just writing books for Tom, in case somebody knows. Like, Jeff's sitting there in LA going, what would Tom like?
He calls him. Let me ask you. If I could get you any kind of book, what is it you would want? He's like, red, orange, green, blue. Yes.
So so those of you who might have been to ifanboy.com recently have probably noticed that Jonathan Hickman, the comics creator, has been writing a biweekly column for us. You would think that because of that, we would talk about his book more, but actually it works in reverse, where I'm like, oh no, we can't talk about his book because we don't want to seem like we're in bed with him or whatever. But there's no way that we can't talk about Pax Romana, in my mind. You know?
Listen, this everything I say to you has nothing to do with the fact that he's writing anything on our site.
Yeah, exactly.
This book is awesome.
The thing about this book is that I feel dumber when I read it.
Oh my God. Don't you just, like,
he's
not only do I feel
everyone.
Yeah, yes.
I feel lazy.
Yes.
I feel just pathetic.
Uneducated and
thought that has gone into that. I've never put this much thought in anything. Like, I'm going to make dinner.
Well, as someone who is completely independent of Jonathan Hickman, I have to say, anyone who takes the time to create a fictional series of dialogues about the nature of civilization between fictional characters, that's fascinating. That's a lot of work. And I have to give him credit too, because I would much rather read it in that format than a bunch of talking heads saying the same thing.
Yeah.
And you get way more packed into that issue because of that.
Yep, totally.
I think he really took a lesson from some of the stuff that Bendis has done, and then
Terry Moore. Terry Moore did it.
I was going to say Terry Moore also. And normally in a book like this, when you see that page full of text, it's like a groaner.
Yeah,
not that way at all.
Yep. What I find really interesting is that Nightly News came out, and a lot of people criticized it because of because it's not your typical comic book and the way the layout is and stuff like that. And it's almost like he's learned from that experience and the evolution of that, and he's merging his graphic design style plus the comic kind of visual storytelling style. Where I think this is definitely an advancement from the Nightly News, just from a storytelling standpoint. So yeah.
Visually, I think it's like cleaner almost in a way.
Yeah,
where Nightly News had a lot of. Sometimes I found it hard to follow visually because there's a lot, so much going on. And I think he's taken sort of an economy to what he's doing in this, which I really enjoy. It makes it very clear.
Yeah.
I think he's even done that from the first issue of this.
Oh, totally. Absolutely. Yeah.
He had to cram so much into that to get it started. And then this one was just much more like the first one was felt a little like work, and it was good work. And I wasn't like upset, it didn't bug me. But this one was smoother, and I really enjoyed it. This is going to be an awesome trade paperback someday.
Yeah. All right, so what else do we got?
Tom, you read The Exterminators, right?
Yes, I do.
You like it?
I do. I thought this last issue I enjoyed. I dislike it when Tony Moore isn't doing the art, and that's nothing against the artists who have filled in.
John Luke.
Because John Lucas, his panel of that woman getting critically injured by an exploding cantaloupe was awesome. But, I always just, in my mind when I picture it, I think of Tony Moore. And I did like this issue because I think Exterminators is at its strongest, where it draws in weird elements from other things, like this issue dealing with people's identity, like your ethnic identity and how you relate to that and dealing with that in an odd way. I thought that was kind of cool, though the whole pall of it ending has sort of put it down.
Yeah. I'm trying not to think of it that way. I wanted to bring this one up because they were in sort of a long storyline for a while, and this was sort of the first time out of it in a little bit. There was a fill-in issue in the middle there where they were on a cruise ship, which was really funny.
Yes. But
this one was just like, I don't even know if that last plot line was wrapped up or not. And he's kind of starting a whole new thing, which is palsy when your book's about to end.
It was kind of wrapped up. The thing with this book is I think it's stronger and it's one-shot stories.
Yeah,
in a weird way. Those are always the more memorable stories because I think there's just like a tightness to it that I think the longer arcs, while enjoyable, because they've been building to this huge end that I don't think we're going to get the right amount of payoff for.
I agree.
We're going to see how all those big, long elements are going to fit together really well, while the one-shots can exist on their own.
Yeah. What I think is really cool about this one, too, is that I know that I believe Simon Oliver is British.
Yes.
And the dude has Los Angeles down. I mean, like, it feels like L.A., and he's got like a – in this book, there's a really nice culture clash between – basically, there's a mother and a son, and he's like 14, and he's accusing her of not being Latino enough, and she's had a whole different experience. And it was just like a totally – it was a complete right turn from where we'd been before, but it fit still, and I loved it. It was great.
It was awesome.
Cool. So Tom had a little fanboy moment with the Atom, and I've got to now log in with my fanboy rage at Uncanny X-Men number 496. Just real briefly, picks up from last issue. Last issue I had a real problem with Mike Joy's pencil with his art. This time it was markedly better.
It's not Mike Joy.
It was markedly better. Basically, all the X-Men after the events of Messiah Complex, they've now scattered, and we've got Cyclops and Emma who were vacationing in the Savage Land, and they're now going to San Francisco. to see what the Angel has stumbled upon. There's some mutant out of control and making everybody go back to have a bad acid flashback to the 60s. But that was fine. But then you had Wolverine, Nightcrawler, and Colossus in Russia visiting Colossus, the grave of Colossus's parents. And there are two things that happened that made me stand up and scream out loud. Nobody else is in the room. I'll do
the White Wolf.
I'll do the minor one and then the major one. The minor one is, of course, Wolverine's Colossus and Nightcrawler get into a barroom brawl, and which is a great scene, which was really, really good. But at one point, Colossus calls someone Tavarsh, you know, the Russian whatever friend or whatever that Claremont always used, and they fracking spelled it wrong.
Ooh,
it's T O V A R I S C H, and they forgot the S. It was T O V A R I C H.
So it's slang. That's Russian slang.
I am guessing. Yeah, I'm gonna go out on a limb here that there's probably not an exact English translation of that word.
All I know is that it's got to be done the way it's been done all these years. That's all I'm saying.
Maybe Claremont was getting it wrong all that time.
Maybe. The bigger issue...
Shut your mouth, Josh.
The bigger issue, and now I'm going to warn everybody, if you're into Astonishing X-Men and you don't want to be spoiled, stop. But they spoiled the end of Astonishing X-Men.
Oh, don't you can say another word.
All I got to really? Say... Yes. What happens is that Wolverine's giving Colossus a hard time about lamenting his parents and all the loss in his life, and Nightcrawler goes, hey, give him a break. The man just visited his parents' grave, and just a few weeks ago, spoiler alert, he lost the woman he loves.
Why did you do that?
Because I had fucking ruined for me, too! I can't believe it!
We're all about sharing pain.
I know. Now I know it's not going to change the story. We know, but now I know what happens. I think I know what happens. It's not fair.
I didn't want to know.
Well, you're coming down with me.
Listening wanted to know.
I warned them. Did I not warn them? I warned them.
We're editing that out.
No.
You're just going to hear a blank, or you will have heard. No way.
It's very upsetting. I can't believe they would let that go through. I just can't believe it. Scheduling conflict or not. You know, someone's got to be minding the store, you know, with a book as big as that and a character as big as that. That's a huge bet. It's a huge, huge problem. So
a lot of people were pissed about that.
Yeah. Jesus.
Who would have thought Cyclops is a woman?
Yeah. Well, speaking of women and Joss Whedon, Buffy number 12 came out. And for the past 2 months, Dark Horse has been hyping this, you know, saying that something really big happens in Buffy number 12. And I'm thinking someone's going to die. Something's going to happen. Do you remember Cruel Intentions, that movie from the 90s?
Do I?
Yeah. And do you remember when Sarah Michelle Gellar made out with Selma Blair?
Do I?
Yeah. Well, if you like that movie, then if you like that scene, then you might like this book.
That's the big thing they hyped, is girls making out.
Well, they didn't even make out, but it Buffy in bed with a chick. That's basically what happened. And what's so funny is that it screams gimmick. Like, it screams, like, we're going to make Buffy gay. And even in the script it does, because Buffy's talking to the girl and she's like, don't mention this to anybody. It's better kept between us. You know, like, it's just, like, totally unneeded for the story. And maybe it will be needed for the story, but, like, it just came, for me, it came out of nowhere. So I don't know. I thought it was funny that the big thing that happened was that Buffy experimented.
She's gonna fall in love with a lesbian vampire.
Yeah.
That's the only direction this can go.
It's the only way.
It's better than Roseanne making out with a chick.
So that was a little shocking. But then the last book that I want to talk about real quickly was Clandestine Number 2, which was Alan Davis's written and drawn series, picking back up from the 90s when he was working on it. Just real quickly, it ends with a character dropping into the past on the train in the Crosstime Caper from Excalibur, and it ends with Excalibur, Captain Britain, Megan, Phoenix, and Shadowcat, and Lockheed, and Nightcrawler, and I giggled with fanboy joy because I love Excalibur. So this is like, it's lame and it's, you know, whatever, we're going back in time and dimensional, whatever, but it gives me Alan Davis drawing Excalibur, so I'm a happy comic reader. So yeah.
That's all you need, man.
So it's the little things in life, really. So,
oh, let's just take us back to the things that made us happy. That is, man, that is your catnip. That is your crack.
It is. It really is. So,
give me that Excalibur. Uncut. Don't step on it.
We wanted to take a quick second, and people can write reviews of their own books on ifanboy.com, and we really like
that feature, and I love reading what other people have to say as opposed to just three of us.
Yeah, that was one of the main reasons why we did it, because we're pretty much sick and tired of each other's opinions, so we want to hear everybody else's opinions.
Aren't you afraid to come down from your pedestals?
Yes. But it's been great because a lot of people have been writing reviews and rating the comics, and we wanted to take some time to highlight a couple of them. So, Josh, do you want to do the first one?
The first one, just because, the other people's opinions matter, and iFanboy is a community. So we got Torque, T-O-R-K, that's the username. He wrote about Green Lantern 28, loved it, gave it a 5 out of 5 story and art. And he brought up the point that the fact that the Red Lanterns appear to be born of the remnants of the Empire of Tears certainly doesn't bode well for the Green Lanterns. It's amazing how one little side story 20 years back has served for potentially the greatest epic DC's done in a long time. Kudos to Geoff Johns for mining the past with a purpose and a skill that shows him as the greatest comic writer DC has right now, which is something I didn't know. I didn't know that that was an old story.
It's from an Alan Moore story, yeah.
There you go.
Really?
Yeah,
Tom knows his shit. That's awesome.
God, you
know
what?
I don't have a life.
all right, so
I
our next
beard going down to my knees right now. That's why I know that.
And just stacks of comic books all around you.
this place is a tinderbox. That's all I gotta say. All
right, so our next review comes from Jay Stump, who reviewed the New Frontier special we talked about, and he gave it a 5 for the story and a 4 for the art. And Jay Stump says that this book had 3 stories in it. One dealt with Batman and Superman's fight that was only hinted at in the New Frontier. This is a story that I wanted to read when I saw the newspaper article that was the book. I must say it was pretty much everything I hoped for. Seeing Batman and Superman trying to kill each other in a no-holds-barred fight was great. I also like how it showed the formation of the ever-beloved Trinity. So,
there's a term that they're going to overuse at the DC.
Yeah.
Trinity? I realized that. I was like, wait a minute. Didn't Matt Wagner just do a story called Trinity?
Yeah, they love the three of them. So.
And then finally, Rofo, R-O-F-O.
Sure.
Please.
Yeah, go for it, Tom.
Rofo writes of Pax Romana, which he gives a 4 out of 4 on story and a 4 out of 4 on art. The
or
only
four
real weakness. What was that?
It's 4 out of 5.
Also works.
4 out of 5. Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know how it works. the only real weakness I have found in the writing of this series is that the pacing is almost too fast at the expense of character development. Only Brigadier General Nicholas Chase and Emperor Constantine seem well developed, and it's hard to get a real handle on any of the other characters.
That's a good observation.
Yeah, it is, and that's one of the reasons that we picked it. Is just wow, I lost my train of thought completely.
Hey, don't apologize.
But it's not all just this book was awesome. Like, that's good analysis.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought of it, but I think he's right, and we could sit here and tell you it's awesome. But there's that.
We did tell people. It was
I know,
awesome.
Exactly.
So these were just excerpts of the reviews that they wrote. If you go to ifanboy.com, look at the show notes for the show, we'll have links to the reviews, and you can read them all and discover everybody else's reviews. So,
comic section and write your own.
Yeah, go and maybe we'll pick yours to read on a future show.
If you want to write a review, you go to the little Your Comics thing, and then each of the things that you picked will have the option to write a review about it.
Yeah.
And then everyone can comment on those reviews. And it's been great to read.
Yeah. So, all right. A little more business. This show is also sponsored by FooComics.com, which is a great new website that helps stores manage their customer subscriptions. It was created and designed by a comic book collector, so he kind of knows what he would be looking for in the ultimate store and wanted to build an application that would help them do that. So if you are having a hard time managing your subscription at your store, tell your store owner to go to FooComics.com/iFanboy to learn more.
Finally, we want to thank Triptych Books, and they were founded in early 2006 by 3 friends who wanted to bring new life to pen and paper role-playing games. Basically, they're just 3 guys who wanted to start a company doing something that they love and give back to a thing that they really loved and try to make a living of it. So that's very cool. You can go to Triptych Books, which is www.triptychbooks.com, and you'll find an introductory kit and a free downloadable PDF and all sorts of stuff like t-shirts. We met these guys at WonderCon, and they really believe in what they're doing, so it should be good stuff.
Cool. Awesome. All right, so on to the email, the part that we all love. Our first email comes from Leland in Olympia, Washington, who says, I've really only been reading comic books for about 2 years now, and I've been wondering about something. growing up, the Spawn movie came out, and as did the cartoon series on HBO. I was just wondering how you guys felt about this franchise. It seems to have been pretty popular, but I've never really heard anyone talk about it. Was it a 90s thing? Is it any good? I'd love to hear what you guys think. Thanks.
This is a longer conversation than we probably have time for, but I just wanted to hear you say Spawn.
Spawn.
My there are like seven words that my Long Island accent comes out on, and Spawn's one of them.
I'll answer, Ron.
I bought issues 1 through 100 of Spawn.
You bought the Spawn?
I bought the Spawn, and I read every one of them, and then I stopped at 100 because at 100 I said, I'm out, and I just walked away. it was a 90s thing, I guess, right? I mean,
that's kind of why no one talks about it, I think, because I don't know what's happening with Spawn, but I don't think it matters all that much anymore because I have to assume it hasn't been that good.
Well, I've heard people say some good things about the newer stuff, and it has only been recently that The Walking Dead passed Spawn as the highest-selling Image book.
Yeah.
Wow. So there are people out there that are buying Spawn. Oh, they're heard some good things about Spawn.
Yeah, the people who buy the action figures are completely dedicated to the book. I mean, like, you know, they love that aspect. And then, but the thing that gets me about Spawn, at least as far as what I could tell, is that it's gone through, I think, in the past like 4 years, like three or so kind of reboots. You know, where like it was basically Spawn was done by Todd McFarlane. It was his inaugural Image book, and it was about a guy who made a deal with the devil and had to be a soldier in the devil's army and couldn't get to his wife and his kid and blah, blah, blah. And then they went down like a crime angle with Sam and Twitch, the work that Bendis did. And then they went with like a horror angle. And now I don't know actually what angle they're doing now. I know that David Hine was writing some of it. He did some stuff at Marvel. I have honestly
sort of the
no Capullo's been long gone. Yeah, he's been gone for ages.
I don't know any
Angel Medina, I think, was doing it for a while, right? So anyway,
it still looks like Spawn. I think that maybe one of the reasons is that it's kind of just doing what it did.
Yeah.
Like when you flip through a Spawn book, it kind of still like it has that look, which is, you know, both kind of good and bad. Yeah. It never really evolved, as far as I understand.
Yeah. So
the movie wasn't good.
No.
Oh, the movie was bad.
The cartoon,
the animated series was beautiful, but he was the most frustrating and infuriating character in the history of anything.
Yeah.
He would just sit there and whine and not do anything.
My favorite part of the cartoon was the intros by Todd McFarlane dressed all in black at a drawing board in a warehouse.
That's where I do all my drawing.
I know.
It's from Canada, and he lives in Arizona, and he talks like he's from Brooklyn. What is that? Sorry.
All right. Next email.
John.
Our friend John. Hosh. John.
I don't actually know how to say his last name. I think realized. It's
Johnny H.
Yeah.
John Hawk. He writes in. He says, why am I still reading Countdown? Is this going to pay off? Where do you think they went wrong? Are you looking forward to Final Crisis?
Well, Tom, you're the resident DC guy that Connor's not here.
Oh, I dropped Countdown a while ago.
Oh, bravo. Really? Good, sir.
Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, I dropped. I think where they went wrong was the reason 52 works so well is that was the place you went to read about those characters and that story.
Yeah.
That story wasn't in other books. But what DC did is when they took Countdown and said, this is going to be the spine of the DC universe, they almost took all the cool elements that they could be telling in Countdown and told them in other stories. You know, if you want to read about the New Gods, read Death of the New Gods by Jim Starlin. It's a thousand times better than the stuff that's being done in Countdown. If you want to read about the villains, read Salvation Run.
Right.
It's better than what they're doing in Countdown. You're just getting, like, not a little bit of everything, and it's not done really well. And, you know, it's sort of what's indicative of me of the problem is, like, you see a character, they introduce someone like the Jokester, who was a really cool character and had a really good one-shot about him, and then they killed him.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, well, this is how this is going to go. You know, they're going to just, you know,
I feel,
the opportunity is sort of wasted.
Yeah, I'm still reading it, believe it or not, because I have a hard time letting go.
No.
I thought about it.
But I get the strong sense, and again, you know, Paul Dini is the head writer on Countdown. He also writes on iFanboy.com, so we're showing, we're totally cool. I think DC editorial changed direction about maybe a quarter of the way through, and then they changed direction again about half of the way through, And I think what was originally planned is not what we're seeing now. That's the gut I get. I know nothing of that fact. I don't know for sure. But I get the feeling that, like, when they quickly realized either what wasn't working or they decided what they were going to do with Final Crisis and they started moving pieces to do that, I don't think everything – it's totally pure. I think editorial kind of screwed this one up. So.
Well, the crazy thing was the main stories that they started off with, yeah. I sort of got interested again when they dropped those.
Yes, yeah.
About 8 weeks to do other stuff. And then as soon as those stories came back in, I was like, I'm out. I'm like, I'm really angry. I was like, I don't want to read it. I want to read more about these stories. They were doing good stuff with this. So. Yeah.
Now they're at like 8 now?
Yeah, it's almost over. Yeah.
So basically, if you've read it this far, then I'm like, you should finish it.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I mean, if you care that much, then you probably are going to want to know want to see how it ends and then getting into Final Crisis.
So are we excited for Final Crisis?
Sure, why not? Grant Morrison.
Yeah.
Could go either way. Yeah. I mean, I think it could be awesome, but it could just be like, oh, no, this is an event that – haven't we had enough crises?
Well, I mean, but this is a final crisis.
Yeah, you know what? Infinite crisis.
I am encouraged by the fact that they seem to be taking a lesson from the Sinestro Corps story and not deciding to tell it in every single book that they're going to be doing. You know, so far they've said that there isn't a lot of crossovers with it, which I think will benefit the story. But it could, you know, it could be crap. Who knows? Yeah. That's why we buy them every week.
Yeah, I mean, and that's
do ahead of time.
Yeah, exactly. And like, the thing is, again, I mean, I've been saying it for the past couple of weeks is that I think that there's something funky going on in the DC offices from the editorial standpoint. So I'm curious to see how much of it truly is Morrison and how much of it is just Morrison scripting a la Miller scripting Civil War while Marvel pretty much wrote Civil War. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm excited for it, though. I mean, J.G. Jones art, I'm there anytime. So, you know.
A series is never better than like the 2 months before it comes out.
Yeah, that's true.
That's at its best when you're the most excited.
Oh, this is gonna suck. This is hey, it's not bad.
Yeah.
if you have questions, and those are two good ones, you can write to contact@ifanboy.com.
All right. Okay, so we're running a little long, so we're just gonna do one voicemail this time around. And our first voicemail comes from someone who's confused about superhero comics.
Hi guys, I am relatively new to the comic book world. I absolutely adore it, however. I read a lot of indie comics, and I have been following the Fables and Jack of Fables, Buffy. But I find myself shying away from anything Marvel because the stories are so ingrained. I was reading Dark Knight for a while and Batman Detective, but there's just stuff that I feel like I'm never going to understand because I haven't been reading it for the last 40 years. If you have any suggestions for me of like a good way to get introduced to some of those basic characters, basic storylines, I would sure appreciate it. Thank you.
So that's a very good question that we get a lot, that a lot of people write in about. And actually, we need to also clarify that she had called in after that saying that she knew that Batman wasn't a Marvel book and she just got nervous on the phone. So let's give Robin a little credit. Also, her name was Robin. She didn't say that on that call. But anyway, so Robin is afraid of the superhero books because of the weight that they carry. And it's interesting because we talked about on our upcoming video show this Saturday, we're talking about superheroes and why we like them. And so, Robin, you might want to go check that out. But this is one answer. We've answered this question before, and Josh, you and Connor always got mad at me when I said this, but my point of view is that if you're interested in superhero comics and you're curious about them, but you're scared by the baggage, just pick them up, start reading. If you don't understand something, just go to Wikipedia, go to the web, and you'll find your answers there, or go to the comic book store, you know?
I would have said the same thing.
Oh, okay. Well, when I said that on the show a year ago, you yelled at me.
Listen, I don't remember these things.
I would say... If you're interested in it, just grab one. I mean, if the story doesn't make sense and it's boring, it's not because you don't know what's going on.
It's because
it's boring and it's a bad story.
And it doesn't make sense.
People seem to want to blame like a boring story and that obviously I don't know something that makes this interesting.
Right. But
most of the time that's not true. Most of the time if something's really boring, all the Wikipedia and everything is not going to make that story fantastic. You're not going to look at it and be like, oh, this is, you know, This is great. No, now I know what this is.
And more often than not, we're just as confused as you are, and we've been reading them for years.
You know what? When I was a kid, always the things that I remember most about superhero comics was I was like, I like Spider-Man, so I just buy it, and I would start reading it, and I would fill in the blanks as I went, and if it was any good, I'd know it, and I'd enjoy it, like you said, and you know, if not, also, you know, Fables isn't like it's free of baggage.
Yeah.
There's five years behind that book. And, you know, you're reading that. It's you know what? Fundamentally, it's no different than that. Story is a story is a story.
Yeah.
You know,
it's almost easier to pick up something like the Fantastic Four at issue 546 than it would be to pick up Fables at issue 71.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, because Fantastic Four is never going to stray that far from what it is. Well, Fables has gone, you know, miles and miles away from, you know, where it's at.
I mean, I hate to be like, go to the site, but like if you are curious about a book, okay,
go to their site.
No, if you're curious about a book that's coming out or you've been interested in a character, like take a look at some of the reviews that people have written and some of the comments under it. You'll figure out if that's a good time, like if you go to the comics section of iFanboy, you'll figure out if that's a good time to jump on or not. You can you know, use the community. People will help.
Personally, I mean, like, personally for me, when my favorite time of reading comics was my first 2 years when I didn't know anything and I went out and I found out everything I could know about the X-Men. Like, that was, and then I went out and found out everything I could know about Spider-Man. And then in the late 90s when I went and found out everything I could find out about The Flash. You know what I mean? Those were my favorite times, you know? So don't deny yourself that, the innocence of not knowing anything.
That's deep.
I know, isn't it? So if you have any questions similar to Robin, deep ponderings, you can call us at iFanboy at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697.
Let's wrap this puppy up.
Yes.
We mentioned earlier the New Frontier contest and that we have 10 winners. There was hundreds of entries. And we have 10 that we picked randomly. I'm not going to read them all off because for some reason people decided not to put their actual name, which would help. We have their email address.
Darth Vader 781.
You guys are getting an email from us, and then we'll follow up. A lot of people did give us their address, though. They were like, here you go, just in case. But we email the winners. But the grand prize winner, basically the winner, the contest was to get these limited edition mugs, pint glasses that were only designed for the party at New Frontier at Isotope during WonderCon. Darwin Cook designed them. There were only a limited number made, and you could only get them at the party except for through this contest.
Yeah.
So people are going to get those. But one winner is going to get a signed New Frontier DVD signed and sketched on by Darwin Cook, and that is Dave Levine, whose email address, by the way, is email Dave Levine at, you know, whatever. But
you do know that's a character from Star Wars, right?
Yeah. Dave Levine.
He was in the band at Jabba.
He was that's Salacious Crumb. There's Dave Levine. He was on bass.
Yeah.
So congratulations, Dave. You're also going to get not only the pint glass and the signed DVD, but you're also going to get the limited edition art print of the invitation to the party, which is badass. So
put it up, and it's awesome.
Yeah, it's definitely a framer. So so Dave, so congratulations, and we'll be in contact with you, and we'll get and everybody else, all the winners, congratulations, and thanks to everybody else who played. And also, you might want to go check out, we talked about last week on our video show last week or 2 weeks ago, which is about super cities, and we talked about the Marvel's New York City kind of experience. The Simon & Schuster and iFanboy are giving away 50 copies of that book, The Marvel Guide to New York City, which you can still enter that sweepstakes for. Go to ifanboy.com, find episode 59. There's a link there to it. There's also a banner running on ifanboy.com, and you can enter that sweepstakes. So good times. But also while you're there, you should go to ifanboy.com, where you can check out the weekly Pick of the Week review every Wednesday, as well as much more in-depth comic book discussion, as well as our Book of the Month, which we're going to be talking about in the show when Connor gets back from his travels, if he gets back. Great stuff there. Great stuff there going on at ifanboy.com. I think Connor's in a Turkish prison. But anyway,
pick your books, review them, and rate them.
go to ifanboy.com/comics. You can do your pull list every week. You can then, after you get your books, you can rate them and write reviews. It's a lot of fun. So do that there.
And, you know, we're going to be highlighting more of those reviews and talking about people. So if you know, that's one more way that you can get on the show and do this stuff. So it works for everybody. It's really helpful, I find. So do that.
Before we go on, Tom, we're sorry. This is our kind of like our stock outro. So just bear with us.
Oh, hey, that's no problem. I know all about this type of thing.
We try to make it fun.
And Tom, I promise you, we never say the word essential. So.
God, thank God. Thank God. It's not as bad if you get to sit at home and have to do it. So. Onward and upward.
If you'd like
everyone
to go to ifanboy.com/. I'm sorry, that was the best sal I could do. I didn't.
That wasn't half bad.
Thank you. It's just starting to turn into Augie, so I stopped talking. This is like, no. Too much about podcasting. If you want to buy any of the books that we talked about in the video shows or get a link to Amazon where you can buy stuff and help the site and everything out, you can go to ifanboy.com/store. Or if you want to sign up for a free Netflix trial, you can go to www.netflix.com/ifanboy. God, can we sell anything else?
I know. So we also have a video show, in case you have never watched it. And that comes out every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern. And you can go over to ifanboy.com, check that out, or go to revision3.com/ifanboy. Yesterday, our episode about superheroes came out, which I mentioned earlier in the broadcast. And next week, we finally got our WonderCon show for y'all, so we're very excited for that one. So,
apparently we do have more to sell. If you want a T-shirt, go to jinx.com/ifanboy. Send in a picture, we'll send you stuff.
And as we said,
buy the shirt off Josh's back. Email him.
As we said earlier, you can email us at contact.
Let's go.
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com, or you can leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS 326-2697. If you're calling the voicemail line, keep it to 30 seconds. A couple of you left several messages, and it was really good to hear from you. But we're not going to play 4 minutes of you talking on the show, but we're really glad you called, so please keep calling, but keep the messages
and
shorter.
And followed up and called again.
So keep them short. And also, if you like the internet and all that kind of stuff, if you go to ifanboy.com/about, or just go up to click about us, you can get all of the links to MySpace, Comic Space, Verb, Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff, and you can follow us and you can be our friends, and we really like that. So thank you.
If you like the show, spread the word, tell your friends about it, talk to people in the comic shop, tell whoever, write a review on iTunes. Thank you.
Yeah. And finally, actually, if you're into the Twitter thing, you should. We're all on Twitter. Tom Caters is also on Twitter, and he's a very good Twitterer. So you should find Tom Caters on Twitter. And if you're on Twitter, you'll know how to do that. Or unless, Tom, you want to say where your Twitter address is. So.
That's Tom Caters. Whatever you have to do to get there.
You keep it.
His email is impossible to find.
Yeah. And finally, if you'd like what we do and what we do week in, week out for all y'all and the comics enjoyment, you can go to ifanboy.com/donations and you can donate through PayPal. We appreciate it. It's the folks who donated, we really appreciate it. We want to thank you. So you keep us going. So, but before we wrap up, Tom has the best new podcast of the year.
Oh, I do.
You do? Why don't you tell? Why don't you tell some more people about it?
I do a show called Tom versus the JLA, where I've been going over every issue of the Justice League of America. I started doing the audio version at 163. I'm at 189 now. It's like a 12-minute long podcast where I just talk about what happens in the issue. And I know that sounds really boring and really horrible to sit and listen to, but I think it's fun.
Now,
because I point out all the funny stuff. Now, I don't just read the.
Yeah, now I'm gonna disclose that I know Tom. We've hung out in person. I would say we're friends, or at least acquaintances, right, Tom? I mean, like,
friends is a good description.
Okay, so I'm a bit biased because but the thing is, I gotta say, it has become the highlight of my day. My commute, I get on the train and I put on Tom vs. the JLA, and you've literally had me laughing out loud on the street. Like it's you, your observations about that era of the Justice League are very astute and spot on and funny as hell. So
it's 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, and which you can get it on iTunes. Just look up Tom versus the JLA.
Yep.
Where else would you find out about the Flash's latent racist tendencies?
Oh, yeah, his weird conservatism, or any of the weird mix of people wearing costumes in odd situations.
Oh, but my other favorite is the before unknown bureaucracy of the JLA, of all the paperwork and the.
Oh, yeah. Apparently, when you join, you have to sit through a class where Batman teaches you where everything on the satellite is. Everyone has to go to that meeting.
It really was a time of comics that I think we've forgotten about.
It's the best time of comics because it's halfway between Silver Age ridiculousness and it's like they like, let's come up with a complicated and interesting story about how criminals can duplicate the Justice League, but then let's have their goal be stealing some diamonds. Like, that's the, we're writing for 8-year-olds. Let's not get too highbrow.
It's really a lot of fun. So Tom vs. the JLA, Google it or find it on iTunes. It's awesome. We'll link to it on the show notes so you can check it out.
Right, thank you, sir.
Yeah. So Tom, thank you so much for coming on and filling in for Connor. It's always a blast to have you on the show. So.
I have no problem. Well, you know, I support anyone who's becoming a monk. Yeah. Connor has decided he wants to be a monk in Europe.
Well, he's already got the shaved head, so he's already one step there. Yeah, exactly.
He's already there.
He finds out he has to give up meat and sex.
Then he's screwed.
He's all about both of those.
That's when he's on the first plane back to the States.
What? Excuse me? What? No, wait, hold on. It says here in this contract, you don't even have pie? Okay.
All right, so I think that wraps it up. Until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Josh.
And
I will be Connor next week.
Three, two.
All right, so sorry.
You laughing?
I just realized they said I'll take it. I had no idea what I was gonna say.
I was like, good. I don't know what to say.
You were okay. Such a pro there for like a few seconds. Like, I got this. Don't worry. I got the intro on this one.